Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market creates win-win partnerships with our suppliers, and we'd love to tell their stories. Simply Grazin Organic Farm, a family-owned operation, provides some of the highest standards in animal welfare around. Their 100% grass-fed beef comes from cows grazing outdoors with very little interference from the husband and wife team behind them. Come have a taste in one of our six Manhattan locations.
Hey, happy new year out there. It's a wonderful, fresh new year, 2012, and this is, this, not a good way to start the new year with a little mouth blurble. Anyway, this is Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Arway, and Heritage Radio Network is housed at Roberta's Pizza, where it's a nice, chilly, windy January Monday. Maybe you've made some New Year's resolutions. I hope that maybe one of them has to do with giving more to your community, doing some charitable efforts. And I'm inspired by our guest today, who has been doing just that for how many years?
4 years.
4 years. This is Pastor Ann Cansfield from Greenpoint Reformed Church. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. So, The food pantry and soup kitchen at Greenpoint Reformed Church is what we're talking about, has been running for 4 years, led by you. And how did it start exactly?
Well, my partner and I are co-pastors at the church, and we live above the building of the church. And so it means that we're around the building a lot, and a lot of people were ringing the doorbell at all hours because they were hungry. And people across America have a sense that when you're hungry, if you're in need, if you show up on the doorstep of a church, that you might be able to receive some food.
I see.
So that's why they were coming to us out of desperation.
And you didn't have any program like that set up. You're like, we're just a church.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I would take people out one by one to the pizza shop around the corner and get them some food and buy them a couple groceries. And
wow.
It got to be quite a lot of time that I was spending over at the pizza shop around the corner. And so we received an anonymous donation from someone who said, we'd like you to use this money to better the community around you. And we did a little research about the area, discovered that there were no emergency food programs in our zip code.
Yikes.
And that explains why people were coming to us, that's mm-hmm. for sure. And so we started one, and it was really about trying to go and meet the existing need that was in the neighborhood. Greenpoint has a 35% poverty rate at the time. That's gone down a little bit in the last couple of years, but it has a very high poverty rate, and so the work that we've done has just grown and grown and grown over the years.
Wow, it's so funny. Greenpoint is maybe not the first borough or neighborhood of Brooklyn that you might think to be so needy in terms of, you know, hungry people. I don't know. I think of, you know, cool shops and cool pizza places and so forth. But you know, that's just one of those wonderful paradoxes of New York. It's like everyone's living next to each other. Your neighbors maybe make so much less than you and so forth. So, I mean,
Greenpoint hasn't always been trendy. It's only been trendy for the last 5 or 6 years. The church that I serve couldn't find a pastor for 20 years before I came. They had a pastor for 3 out of those 20 years, and it was just merely because nobody wanted to come to Greenpoint.
Nobody wanted to.
It was a combination, I think, of the G train and the environmental situation, but Greenpoint was just so undecidedly uncool. And as a result, like in the 70s and 80s, people wanted to leave Greenpoint, and people left Greenpoint in droves. And so the folks that were left were people who were predominantly working class, and many new immigrants would come and settle in Greenpoint. And so it has a history of being a much poorer neighborhood than a lot of people realize when it comes to the economics of living there. Especially, we serve a lot of people who have lived in Greenpoint for their whole lives. Many of them have worked jobs that didn't come with any kind of retirement plan, and so they're living on Social Security alone, which is why we have so many retirees.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that of any subcategory of people who come to us, it's a lot of elderly people.
Yeah,
and most of them worked their whole lives a lot in construction. The men, a lot of women have been domestic workers, and they just don't have enough to make ends meet. And then the other thing that compounds the problem is a lot of folks make just enough that they don't qualify for food stamps, or they only qualify for very minimal food stamps if you are receiving Social Security. And that provides you maybe $1,500 a month of income, which with the rents going up and the cost of medication, if people have to make a decision about how to make ends meet between paying the rent, paying for medication, or paying for food, most people will cut back on food to the point at which they really are hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we end up serving the numbers of people that we have. I mean, toward the end of the month at our food pantry, we'll serve between 500 and 600 people. And that's providing groceries that would probably be about 9 meals, so maybe like 3 days of food. And it's nothing totally fabulous. I mean, fortunately, we've partnered with a number of local CSAs to be able to get fresh vegetables. And there's a great program funded by New York State called Produce Link, that the HIPNAT program, which I think is Hunger Nutrition Assistance Program from New York State, funds, where we get vegetables that are trucked down by local farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And so during the spring, the summer, and the fall, we're able to distribute a lot of fresh vegetables. But that's
from like picked up or leftovers that weren't picked up and stuff like that,
right?
From the CSA,
leftover that's CSAs, great. and then the Produce Link, which is sort of a giant CSA for
nice.
Food pantries.
I like that.
Themselves. It's really and it's really awesome to be able to go and give out good tasty food.
Right, I know, and it's also great for volunteers to be able to cook with these nice produce.
Oh yeah, the volunteers love it. love it. But you know, the canned goods that we get, which are the federal programs, which have been cut phenomenally.
Yeah,
we took about a 70-75% decrease.
Now, what happened here? That was in just the last year.
In the last year. So, as the recession hit, the Recovery Act provided additional funding to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the USDA runs a program called TFAP, which is now I'm forgetting the name of it, but TFAP is what it's called. And basically, the Department of Agriculture goes out and purchases food from farmers, American farmers, and so it's in some ways it acts like a farm subsidy.
Okay.
And then distributes the food to food pantries across the nation. When the Recovery Act funding dried up, it went back to its regular levels and maybe even decreased a little. And so as a result, we had received the previous year, I think something like $100,000 and $110,000 worth of food through TFAP. And it's things like canned corn, canned beans, orange juice. I mean, very, very basic staples. And this year, I think we probably got about $19,000 worth of TFAP food.
So this must have really stopped up your operations there for a moment. And
yeah. Like, it was a really hard year in terms of being able to find it, because most food pantries around New York especially rely on TFAP for probably about 75% of the food that we give away.
So you had people coming, not enough food to give.
Correct. Yeah.
And people had to be turned away at the door or something? Or
right.
Just, and
when we run out,
counting,
we run out.
Yeah, coming for a long time and just... couldn't rely on it anymore.
And as the person whose role it is to make sure that we have enough stuff, that's really how I see my job, making sure we have enough volunteers, making sure that people find out that we're available in case they need to come for food, and then making sure we have enough food itself. It was a real challenge. It took every ounce of my brain and my ability to try to figure out how to make sure that we could go and find food. And we managed to get by, but it was an especially tough year. We got by because of these CSAs and because of these produce programs. So we ended up giving out a lot more fresh produce. We added several local community gardens produced food for us over the summertime.
That's great.
And so while we didn't have the optimal level in terms of volume, we did pretty well just by being really creative and asking for help,
right?
Which is the main thing that I've discovered is we just need to constantly be asking people to help,
right?
Whether it's volunteers to come and anyone can volunteer. We make it really easy for you. We see part of our mission in the neighborhood is to be able to empower people who want to be of service to be of service. There are a lot of organizations where you have to. Basically sign your name in blood, sign up that you're going to come for a whole year and then go through a huge training program.
And it's really fun, hint, hint.
Yes.
It's really fun to cook in this fun kitchen in this church. It's like nothing else, really.
It's the best thing ever. No matter how cranky you are, if you are cranky, if you are depressed, if you are sad, if you are suffering from heartbreak of an awful, terrible breakup, if you don't know what to do with yourself, if you haven't found a career, if you're thinking that you're that tomorrow is not a bright day, come and hang out at the soup kitchen because it's some of the most fun people doing some really fun work, and you never leave.
No.
You never leave sad. You never leave angry. I mean,
and it's a team effort. We got to turn the stuff into food now. Go.
Yeah. And you get to be creative, and there's always room for more people. There's always ways to be creative about figuring out what to do. So one of the challenges that we face is how do we make sure that we have enough food for an ever-changing number of people? You never know how many folks are going to show up, and you never know how many volunteers are going to show up. And that was most evident this year at Thanksgiving. Everyone loves to volunteer at Thanksgiving, which is great. And I don't want to dissuade anyone from feeling as though they want to come to a soup kitchen on Thanksgiving. Yeah, but come again. And then we got a phone call from someone from Time Out and from a writer from Time Out wanting to go enlist us in Time Out. And I had said to him, I thought I was making this great deal where I really wanted him to do a sidebar about all of the other things that people could do with their desire to help at Thanksgiving without having to come to a soup kitchen or a food pantry.
Yeah.
Because so many soup kitchens and food pantries are basically run by wonderfully kind older church grannies that they don't answer the phone, they don't have email, they don't have a website, and they get inundated with folks who want to help. So how can you actually really be of service? So I wanted this guy to go and write a little story about it. That didn't happen. Instead, he listed us front and center as the best place to volunteer for Thanksgiving. So we ended up with 100 additional volunteers in a building that's probably about 2,000 square feet on the main floor, and a kitchen. How big is the kitchen?
And you got to fit the people that come to eat.
Yeah, exactly. It was crazy. We were so fortunate, though, that the church across the street, which is much bigger, let us go over there, and we made 100 pies.
Nice.
So we froze all of these pies for the future, and we gave like 30 of them to another church that was having a different Thanksgiving day event, and we had it was really fun.
How fun is that?
I was really surprised the number of people who came who had never made a pie before.
Hey, you learned something.
Which was awesome. So this is the place to come to learn how to cook.
Meet other people.
Really good looking volunteers. I just, as an aside, if you want to come and meet a really cool altruistic foodie, this is the place. So anytime, all you have to do is show up. Anytime on Wednesday between 3 and 7:30. If you happen to like to do dishes, you will get extra karma. You will get like stars in your crown in heaven if you want to come and do some dishes. We serve the meal between 6 and 7 p.m. and we'll feed probably between 60 and 70 people at the meal. And then also going on Wednesdays, we'll make up bags of food for the food pantry, which are then distributed on Thursdays. So if you want to come and volunteer on Thursday, it's anytime between 9 and 5.
So you get to choose which day, different tasks. keep it, you know, keep it different.
If you're not into cooking, you can just, I love making up bags of food. It's very,
that's fun.
It's like an assembly line, and you get to
you just chatter throughout and, yeah, the whole thing, yeah, or
meditate,
whichever. Or meditate.
You can't really mess up. It's also a place where, like, if you're looking to feel affirmed and to feel like, hey, I can really make a difference, this is the place to come. Because people are really distributing not just food, but actually like a lot of love and compassion.
Definitely. And you mentioned, because I did get your email seeking, you know, help, because you were mentioning I have to just talk more about it and spread the word, ask more for help. And I remember that email came around, maybe like right after Thanksgiving. And you're like, I took a deep breath, and it was a big deal to ask this news, this email list of how many people, like maybe a couple hundred or so.
Yeah, I took every person in my contacts list and sent out an email, which I'm sure I must have, like, all the people I had contacted to buy things on Craigslist must have gotten the same email from me saying, hey, we really need some help. But
yeah, no, but I mean, and it worked, and you guys got a great, you know.
We got a wonderful response. And so the thing that's kind of scary for me is I'm terrible at asking for money, and I have to go and summon up the courage to be like, hey, I need to go out and
you
beg
do.
For money, basically.
You do.
And I beg so that other people don't have to.
Right.
That people who have begged many instances for their lives. I mean, the guys that you see who are inebriated in McCarran Park, like all the folks who you see regularly who you wonder, like, where, how do they get by? Are the people that we care for, and I'm willing to go and ask for help, so that they don't
please
have to.
Please do. I was just thinking, it was so funny because that same day I think I got a dozen or so emails from different big retail chains asking me to buy something. You know, it was that time of year. So yeah, keep on asking.
Yeah, and anyone who would like to donate money, we turn your money into food, and it's a really phenomenally awesome process. The Food Bank of New York allows us to go and purchase food for between 10 and 18 cents a pound.
Nice.
Which
and
is
you know,
really
every
awesome.
Cent of that money that you donate is going right to the needy.
I'm really proud of how lean an organization we are. Like if I had a lot of money, and I kind of wish that I did. I used to be a financial advisor before 9/11. There's still a part of me that wishes I were on Wall Street, because I could get a lot more done if I just had a little bit more cash to give away.
But now every cent, it makes a difference.
Every cent, and it
so
really goes. Like
it's,
there's not a lot of overhead at all. We're really, really careful about how we spend it. And we have so many people who volunteer and give of their time that I would say the biggest resource that allows us to save a lot of money is just the tremendous number of volunteers. So if people would like to go and donate, it's greenpointchurch.org/give. We're working
nice.
On a website just for the soup kitchen, the food pantry. But for right now, we're still running out of the
kind of
church
granny.
Website.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
kind
we
of
are.
Like
we're
a
very
granny. Style.
We're a mom and mom shop.
All
I like
right.
to say.
We'll
and,
check that out.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after a short break. So I'm sure there's lots more to say.
Thanks.
Zach.
I don't mind stealing bread from the mouths of decadence, but I can't feed on the powerless when my cup's already overfilled. But it's on the table, the fire's cooking, and the farming babies with slaves are working. The blood is on the table and the mouths are choking. I'm going hungry. But I can't beat on the powerless when my cup's already overfilled. But it's on the table, the fire's cooking.
back on Let's Eat In with today's guest, Pastor Ann Cansfield, who has helped many people not go hungry. Like the song. Good choice there, Jack. For 4 years at Greenpoint Soup Kitchen and Food Pantry. Those are two, like a technical term, you were explaining before that one aspect is a food pantry and the other aspect is the soup kitchen where you actually serve the prepared food.
So what we discovered in our research back when we started doing this is that there were two different genres of people who were hungry in our neighborhood. Or categories of people. One category were folks who either were homeless or lacked kitchens. And in Greenpoint, there are several large SRO buildings, single residence occupancy buildings. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of old housing stock where in many instances they don't have a working kitchen, especially some of the more nefarious landlords don't keep the kitchens actually able to be running.
Oh,
so
no.
People who don't have a kitchen, which would include homeless folks, and for them, we figured that the best way to help them would be to have a prepared meal, and that's why we have a soup kitchen, which is a dinner, and then food pantries provide groceries, and not prepared food, and that goes mostly for folks who have kitchens, and many instances are families. Are also a lot of
who come all together.
Right.
Yeah, that's always a nice way to enjoy a meal with others in your community and your whole family, perhaps.
And we're really hoping, especially
coming and going.
Yeah, especially at the dinner, which I long for a day when we go out of business. But until then, I would love to expand so that we could be open more days. One of the things that is a dream of ours.
You long to be out of business because people are fed.
People would be fed. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But until then, I would long to actually be able to be open more days. And and as part of that, we're looking, as I mentioned to you earlier, we're looking at expanding the size of our kitchen. We cook in a really small kitchen, but one of the big questions is, what are these people going to eat next week?
It's amazing
tomorrow
the amount
the following
of food
day.
That you guys produce out of that small little church kitchen. It's pretty impressive. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, and I know, tell me more about this collaboration you did with a temple in the community.
The temple and the mosque, yeah. So
it's like the interfaith food.
The Greenpoint Interfaith Food Team.
That's cool.
One of the moments where we reached out and asked for help, some of my friends who it was really just a group of friends actually. There was a guy from the synagogue, which is a small but growing synagogue, and I highly recommend it to anybody. It's the Congregation of Israel, which is the synagogue in Greenpoint. And when I first arrived in Greenpoint, they were about as small as our little church was.
And that's the only synagogue in
Greenpoint. That's the only synagogue.
Okay.
And so some folks from the synagogue.
The only
mosque in town, okay. Which is the Greenpoint Islamic Center, where the there was a fellow who was a part of there. And so the three of us at the beginning, a fellow from the mosque, a fellow from the synagogue, and I, we were just buddies, basically. and we had done some 9/11 services and some Thanksgiving services together. They came together and said, "Hey, what can we do?" And the group grew with interest from the communities. Unfortunately, the imam had to leave from the mosque, and so there's a new imam who I have yet to actually meet, and that's been slowing us down a little. And then, but the group kind of has worked with things that interest us. So right. The youth group from the mosque comes and volunteers, and the synagogue had started a garden in the backyard
right.
of the synagogue. This great
edible garden
that they've been working on, and so it's one of those things that we're looking to expand. In the midst of starting a soup kitchen, a food pantry, my partner and I also had two children. And so that is between the chaos of all of that. Thank you. It's my my daughter Grace's first birthday today, in fact.
A special day for a little girl.
Taking her out for pizza here at Roberta's.
Nice.
But we haven't had as much of a chance to work on that together. But it's been really a great model for collaboration along interfaith lines.
I think that's very inspiring.
And a lot of people say, "Oh, what do you guys? How do you do interfaith work?" And I think The best way to go and meet people who are different from you is to do something together, not right. like sit around and have a debate about Jesus, Muhammad, and Moses, but like actually just make some food together and serve some food together and enjoy really awkward religious moments together.
Awesome.
Like where you're just like, one day someone had, had made a rainbow sponge cake. And okay. I don't even know if it was in June.
Is it like
and
those like Italian like layered cake?
No. We're talking like vibrantly gay rainbow sponge
okay.
cake.
And I see.
So the imam's wife was next to me, and she really politely was like, "So what's with the cake?" And I'm like, "You mean that really gay cake?" And she's like, "I wasn't gonna say that." And I'm like, Are you asking a question about me? She's like, no, I wouldn't do that. And I'm like, yes, you know, like I'm Aww. Gay, and that is a very rainbow cake. And it was this wonderful moment of actually being like, I did not make that super cake rainbow cake.
Now eat the cake and let's just enjoy.
But you know, yeah, it was a really fun time of just being like, hey, this is.
It's always okay better to explain get to know things one through food. I
through
think
food. It really was, and there are, I can think of so many other moments of like just various people coming together of different backgrounds. I mean, the volunteers are from all over the place, and our guests are from all
over
the place.
Do you have like a favorite meal that stands out?
I think I definitely know that our clientele will love any meal that involves a fair amount of meat, particularly made in a Polish tradition.
Oh,
and one of our chefs is actually. From Slovakia, I think, is her family background. And so she makes, now I can't remember what it is. But she,
it's like a sausage?
Like a sausagey something or another. Okay. And they love that. I actually really enjoy Thanksgiving just because nice. I can handle making a turkey. I'm a terrible cook myself. So
okay.
so I kind of understand what's going in.
Yeah.
We have a veggie chef who is just phenomenal with what she can do with fresh vegetables, and so
that's useful because you guys
gone from
sound
being
like you have a
non-eating veggie person to loving vegetables.
And nice.
And I'm really proud of the food that we serve. Like it's really, really delicious, and it feels so good when the folks leave. As they're leaving, I like to you know kind of greet them as they come and greet them as they leave, and when they actually say, "This is the best food we've had. This is really great."
That's awesome. You
know, and I always joke that there's a money-back guarantee.
So I, changing topic a little bit, you admitted that you think that you're not a good cook. I kind of doubt that. But what do you think would be the most awesome romantic date meal, in your opinion?
See, I really don't...
It doesn't have to be something you cooked, actually.
Yeah. I would go out to the lobster joint in the neighborhood.
Lobster. Like,
yeah, lobster.
Yeah,
I think.
That's fun.
I would go lobster.
Or just because it's one of your favorites?
Yeah, but like I'm such a, like, I cook like a bachelor. Like if I were going to cook it, it would be like a lobster ravioli that I had purchased at the grocery store, to be honest. I mean, I'm really, my New Year's resolution is to eat in and cook for myself. Actually, you've inspired me.
Well, you do a lot of related activities. Let's just say.
I mean, I'm somebody who used to, like, up until reading food rules, I would eat like a Slim Jim and then go out to 7-Eleven and buy a taquito. and that has now changed this last month. And I am no longer, I've purged my Slim Jim collection and have no longer, it was very sad yesterday. I went and looked at the taquitos, but I'm like, never again. but I really like lobster.
Lobster is a good one.
Lobster, yeah, in any form. But I'm a big fan of a lobster roll.
Oh yeah.
Although I will admit, my favorite romantic date, and this is, you're gonna all laugh at me. Have you ever gone to the Costco's up on the East River in on Vernon Boulevard?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're really broke and you need to have a very romantic date,
a hot dog.
The $1.50 hot dog and soda.
Nice.
And then you go out and you can sit in these cute little hot dogs. They have great benches and you can watch the river. I mean, it's actually really.
I didn't know
it's
that.
It's a fabulous little place to go, and there are fishermen who are off fishing. It's a cool little park that they have over there.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
All right. So while
so
you do
a whole
your
date for less
shopping.
Than $5.
Yeah. Grab
and then you can go Costco shopping for the soup kitchen. We always need Chinette plates and recycling bags.
You always need Chinette plates?
Chinette plates and recycling bags.
Because you guys have to wash the dishes.
Yeah,
and
well, the Chinette plates, no, not Chinette plates. They're the thicker paper ones.
Oh, sorry.
Because unfortunately, with the thin ones, that if you're not soupy, so steady okay. on your feet, you'll go all over the place.
Yeah. You sound like this comes from a lot of
experience.
Cleaning experience.
Yeah, so thin ones, while they're appreciated, we usually have to triple them in order to make sure that they don't go all over the place. But
all
the China
sorts
plates,
of needs at the soup kitchen, it sounds like.
Well, so I spend a lot of time at Costco. But,
okay, I see. So that's like a nostalgic place for you.
Yeah. Embarrassingly enough.
True.
I also like salad with goat cheese, now that I'm thinking about it.
Salad with goat cheese?
With goat cheese and dried cherries.
Mm. All right. Well, we'll have to do another volunteer soup kitchen day.
That would be awesome.
I think that'd be fun. Make some of Anne's favorites. All right. So thanks so much for being here again.
Thank you
and
all.
Do check out greenpointreformchurch.org.
Yeah.
Right?
No, just greenpointchurch.org.
Greenpointchurch.org. All right. Sign up to volunteer and make something tasty this new year.
Just swing on by.
All right.
Thanks.
For sure. I die each
time. I hear this sound. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. On December 17th, Typhoon Sendang dropped over 180 millimeters of rain in less than 24 hours and caused severe flash flooding to the northern Mindanao region of the Philippines. The cities of Iligan and Cagayan de Oro City were hit the worst, and the area has suffered severe damage and human loss. 654 people have been claimed dead, hundreds more are missing, and nearly 100,000 Filipinos have been displaced after the floodwaters destroyed everything in its path during the late hours of the night. The city's power and water supplies were shut down for nearly 24 hours, and many Filipinos need your help. Xavier University is accepting donations to help those in need. Please visit www.sendongrelief.org for more information. That's www.sendongrelief.org.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.